Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hey, Brian, welcome to Crypto Nights. We are just so excited to have you on our show. And welcome. And why don't we kick it off with some introduction to both yourself and to Insights Network?
Awesome. Thank you, Doctor. So I am Brian Gallagher. I'm leading the Insights Network project. What we are doing is creating a blockchain-based data exchange. So what that means is we are trying to create an environment where users will maintain complete control and ownership over their data that they generate on the internet. And they will be able to consent each time that data is used or exchanged with a requesting party and receive Instar tokens as their reward.
Very well put and very succinctly put, my goodness. So, but it has a lot of implications. So, because over the last several years, of course, we have seen these are great companies and Amazon or Facebook or, you know, Google, all of these are great companies that are providing a lot of value to all of us. I admit that. But at the same time, there are several people that are very concerned that maybe some of these companies know more about me than I do, perhaps about my digital life. And also, oh my God, how is it being used? I don't even know. I mean, it kind of feels like it's my property. It's about me, but somebody else owns various angles of it. You know, Amazon owns my profile there and Facebook owns some of the things I do there and Google. So I'm thinking it's my digital identity and it seems to be owned by all of these people, much less controlled by me. So are we looking at progress in that direction, giving the control back to people? Is that what the idea is?
Yes, I think we are. There's a sort of a perfect storm occurring right now. Consumers are becoming much more aware that creating profiles on social media networking sites and participating in them each day results in hundreds, thousands of various companies or groups tapping into these databases to sort of extract data and create trends and forecasts and resell the data. And as you mentioned, it's not totally evil to use consumer data to help improve systems. It brings, costs down for services. It improves our quality of life. But the problem is there's also this big opportunity for abuse. And so now we've started to see that come out into the public. And so people are aware. The European Union is enacting new regulations, particularly the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, in the European Union, which will require companies or data requesting groups to be able to provide a proof of consent each time they're processing a consumer's data. If they can't provide this proof, there's large fines. They can be fined up to 4% of their company's turnover, $10 million max on the first violation, the second violation, $20 million max. And if you violate it a third time, you know the famous saying, three strikes and you're out. So it might get really, really bad for your business. So there's this consumer awareness brewing combined with actual legislation going into effect. And so where we see this going is that there's really no choice. Companies are going to have to start being compliant and more transparent with consumers. And consumers are going to demand that they actually receive some compensation in exchange for the data they generate, which can really make a difference actually in some people's lives. You know, if you're able to make a couple extra $100 a month by being an active participant in the internet, which you already do every day, that's grocery money that may help feed your family. So, you're not becoming a millionaire by sharing your data, but it can make a nice extra revenue stream of passive income that you wouldn't otherwise have while not having to change your behavior. You're already doing this every day.
Okay, I understand that. So then in that case, how will Insights Network make money?
Yeah, so Insights Network is more of an open source marketplace that connects the requesters and providers, and its goal is to be fully decentralized. So by the time the software is complete and fully open source, requesters should be able to come into the network place a token and data requests, you know, on a requester dashboard, which we're actually launching in 2 weeks publicly, so that people will actually be able to come and create a smart contract automatically that targets various groups, demographic groups. And you can essentially place bids in exchange for the data you're requesting. And the users inside the client can then either be willing participants and consent to trade this data in exchange for tokens, or they can take a pass. There are network fees, very small, associated with each data transaction that comes back into the sort of operating budget to ensure that developers can continue to be incentivized and work on the project. On the consumer application facing side, there are many other, you know, revenue opportunities for survey placement and things like that. However, we're more of an open source technology company. So the real goal here is to create a fully decentralized solution with developer incentives that will keep powering the network so that it can just perpetually run itself, essentially.
And I know you and I were talking a bit about this earlier. Can you talk about the technology and the architecture that is going to enable all of this briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. The project is, there's a couple of different layers to the project. There's sort of the protocol layer, which involves blockchain, and an off-blockchain solution called multi-party computation, which I'll get into in a second. And then there is the application layer. And the application layer is what consumers see. It's what's on their devices. It's how they interact with the protocols. So simultaneously, we are building on the protocol and the application so that they work with each other. So what makes this possible, you know, I think it's due to the sort of sweeping awareness of big data in the industry. It's becoming a popular concept now. You're going to start to hear a lot about data exchange, data ownership. And it's easy to talk about, but when you look at the technology requirements to power something like this, if you look at the Ethereum blockchain, if you were to say, you know, let's just start trading data on Ethereum blockchain, there's several issues. The first is if you're trading data across a blockchain, it's publicly available. So most of the data we're trying to protect would be exposed if you were not to provide some type of encrypted solution. If you want to provide an encrypted solution and trade that across a blockchain, the gas limits or the sort of bandwidth requirements are extensive. And so there'd be very large transactions, large movements of data. So that's not feasible because the costs are too high. The blockchain can't handle that type of load. So you need to create a new solution that is scalable and affordable. And so what that means is, how do you compute on encrypted numbers? You can't do it on blockchains, it's too expensive. So we're building what's called multi-party computation software, and it provides an off-chain solution that can match data and exchange data without clogging down the network. So that's the core piece of the protocol is multi-party computation. Then there's still a blockchain involved because you need to provide a record of proof of consent. So the way that that happens is the blockchain ledger is permanent and tamper-proof. So by having your off-chain scalable protocols sort of executing the data transfers and then working alongside the blockchain so that each time a transfer occurs, there's a record of it. This record doesn't expose the private data we're talking about. It just provides a proof of consent, a record on the ledger, so that all these data transfers are accounted for. But everyone's personal info is protected. You don't know what was traded. So that's sort of how these two technologies work together. For blockchain, rather than build our own blockchain, we're leveraging the EOS blockchain. So for the last several months, we've been working behind the scenes on the EOS testnet through versions 1.0, 2.0, and now Dawn 3.0 just launched as the EOS team leads up to their mainnet in June. And the EOS blockchain is special because it's designed to scale from the beginning. Bitcoin and Ethereum were created, and now they're trying to figure out how to change it so that it can scale. The EOS blockchain is developed by Dan Laramere, who's the CTO, and he built the Graphene blockchain engine, which was which provided the first scalable consumer app, Steam, steamit.com. And so he has a proven record of, you know, building blockchain-based softwares that can scale. And so with EOS, there's a couple different features that allow you to own an app and power it through the EOS blockchain with guaranteed throughput and bandwidth. And the way you do that is you have to own some EOS tokens. So we own a share of EOS tokens, and that's the utility of the EOS blockchain, is that no matter what else is happening in the EOS network, if someone's running an ICO, if a CryptoKitties copy app launches and goes viral, it's not going to affect our bandwidth. So there's a big difference there, and it's also a great utility for the EOS token because, you know, it has real utility. It helps you power your own blockchain. And so it's not all shared either. You can have multiple blockchains being used for your app. So there's a new term that Dan Laramere just launched called unlimited transactions per second. And the way, you know, the point of that is that you can have multiple blockchains, you can own your tokens, and you're not affecting, you know, what else is happening in the network doesn't affect you. So it's totally an upgrade to the blockchain technology we've seen to date. And so rather than build our own, we're leveraging this EOS blockchain. And that's what's going to communicate with our MPC protocols. So that's the infrastructure, is blockchain plus MPC. And then there's the application layer, which is the consumer app. You know, we're in Android now, it's a beta. We're doing our iOS beta launch within the next 3 weeks with surveys in the app. So customers, or we'll call them users because they're not our customer. Users will be able to already participate in surveys, asking them about their experiences with crypto. We're actually, you know, doing a bit of a crypto focused targeted survey since our early adopters are the crypto audience. So that's a really exciting thing for us to start seeing the utility of our token being demonstrated. We've already seen it a few times because we've allowed our users to trade their email and ETH addresses to a few upcoming blockchain projects that are interested in tapping into our audience. And so that's where we are.
And how big is your community right now?
So we have a email list of signups that's just crossed 100,000 individuals.
Wow.
We have 40,000 of those which have been KYC approved and verified. So part of the user journey into the data exchange is becoming KYC approved. This ensures we don't have fake users doing Sybil attacks, creating fake accounts, and just trying to run away with a bunch of tokens. So you do have to be KYC approved to participate in the exchange. We don't serve any of, or excuse me, we do not store any of the personal data in our own servers. We have what we refer to as validation and verification partners. So our first big partner is Jumio by NetVerify. It's a Bay Area, Silicon Valley company, one of the industry leaders in identity verification. So they already have pretty much everyone's info. And so when you come in and you get validated, it's just referenced by NetVerify, the documents are approved, and now you're an approved user for the data exchange. And Insights Network isn't collecting your data or reselling it. You know that your verification partner is the one who verified you. And if you want to, in the future, import maybe your income level or talk about your job, there's going to be other validation partners, such as maybe a big payroll company that can know that that's an accurate representation of your income. And so NetVerify will have no idea that you've got your payroll information verified. So it's very decentralized in the way the data is verified. It's not one stored database where we're you know, behind the scenes, filtering through everything ourselves. It's just going to be a wide web of verification.
So let me understand this. So there is my KYC data somewhere and maybe my payroll data somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And is there also a capture of my online digital activity? Is there some kind of a fingerprint of my, what are the other data about me that is captured?
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a rapid feature release over the next year.
Okay.
So it's going to be wide ranging. You know, there's going to be direct targeted surveys. There's going to be sort of what we call an analytics watch. And we're actually potentially partnering with a company right now that specializes in this software and has an SDK. So you may, as a user, be selling your data directly to this company rather than us installing the feature set ourselves. But the purpose of the analytics watch is you are sort of allowing, like you mentioned, your browsing histories and the way you're using your applications to be monitored. And then it's actually displayed in the wallet, almost like a Fitbit tells you how many steps you've taken each day. That's a common example I refer to. So rather than...
Easy to understand.
Yes. So, you know, imagine, you know, it's like your Fitbit for digital activity. You'll have your dashboard in the wallet where you can see everything you're doing. And that's a useful tool. You know, you may realize, wow, I am spending way too much time staring at my phone every day. I need to go outside. And, you know, at the same time, whoever you're consenting and selling this data to, you're aware is acquiring the info and you're aware of what they're acquiring. You know, they're not going to be acquiring your name. They may just, you may be selling them the rights to this data so that they can process it and use it how they see fit. But you're, you know, you're aware that, okay, only my age and income level is associated with this use. There's no way for this company or person to track this activity back to me as an individual. And so, you know, that's going back to the beginning of the conversation, how we see the future of how data is exchanged on the internet. Very much in a more responsible, managed way where the user has more involvement and is compensated for doing so.
Got it. So, and that'll be some kind of a progressive release of these kinds of features over time. But the idea is to encompass most of what we see as the digital avatar or digital representation of each of us. I hope and think over time will be captured either by you or by your partners with the complete control being given to me as a user.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And I can choose on a case by case.
Yeah, the Insights Network won't be able to tap in and see how you are, you know, using your data. You just know who you're selling to directly. The way your data stores in distributed web formats that we can't see. It's almost like owning the encryption private keys to your tokens. You're now owning the private keys to your data. You can think of it like that.
Okay, so I got it. And then I have monetization opportunities. Presumably, I can either auto set and say, okay, all of these kinds of opportunities automatically give this kind of information, but don't give this and this kind of, so I'm controlling the visibility and I might even automate it just for simplicity. And like you said, maybe I'm making a couple hundred dollars of passive ongoing income and I know the nature of information and what kind of companies it's going to. Maybe I'll have a blacklist of companies. I don't want to give my data to this companies, maybe, you know. So, and or I might just come back periodically and look at the opportunities that you provide to me and select who I want to give that data to. I'm imagining this is kind of the direction in which you're heading.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. That's pretty much the mission right there. So in terms of, you know, I think the differentiating factor between, you know, us and maybe a potential competitor is you really need to nail the user experience and the interface. So that it feels like a fun, almost gamified way to manage your digital life, right? And so we are installing profiles and we're talking about doing encrypted messaging. So we're trying to really make the application layer a fun, you know, consumer app. Then there's obviously the infrastructure development that's totally, you know, in a lab with, you know, engineers behind the scenes. And that's not as thrilling for the consumer. So it's you got to be able to sort of match the two because there's a lot of great companies that I'm seeing building blockchain technology across all industries. My concern for them is I don't see any consumer friendly applications being offered. So it's, you know, cool technology, but they're not leveraging it themselves to bring customers in and improve the customer's quality of life. They're just sort of building this open source technology. So in the future, at some point, if they build great open source technology, someone else will leverage it. And I think that's the idea. But you know, we're in the beginning of time here with blockchain. So I think it's an unbelievable opportunity to be able to bring a fun gamified consumer app that rewards customers while, you know, protecting their data. It's just a huge opportunity. It's really a first mover advantage on what's going to be, you know, absolutely massive industry.
Yeah. And you're thinking in the right direction. As a user, I'm thinking, wow, that's like a digital Fitbit, you know, just like there is physical fitness, there is some digital fitness. Am I, like you said, and you're going to give me a dashboard, because most of us don't even know. Did I walk 1,000 steps yesterday or 3,000 steps like that? Yeah. Did I spend 2 hours yesterday on Facebook or 15 hours? We don't keep track of these things. And some of these, when you look back, you're saying, oh my God, I really did that. So
yeah, exactly.
the fact that you're thinking in that direction and you're thinking of this two-pronged model wherein I am getting a great user experience, gamification, and value, and I'm leading a normal digital life, except now you're adding on some cool dashboarding type of features that I'm very interested in looking at,
right? Yeah.
About my own personal stats. And then you're giving me a digital fingerprint, if for the lack of a better word, that I control and monetize. So I think you're kind of thinking end-to-end from a user-centric manner, which is the reason why you're more likely to succeed where others may not have. I get it, and I like it, quite frankly. So where are we with respect to the technology releases? What can users expect to see and when?
So if you go on Android right now, you can download the first beta wallet. It's a very simple demonstration of the utility of our token and what it's like to create a wallet. Right now, when I say very basic, what that means is you can get verified, KYC approved, and have an account. You can subscribe to a couple other blockchain projects and exchange your Ethereum and email address in exchange for Instar tokens. So you know directly who you're selling it to. And then these projects are requesting this data because they're interested in engaging the users in our audience, or very much a, you know, early adopter crypto audience, to engage them and, you know, alert them to their projects and what they're building. And so we have a few projects.
Sorry, go on.
We have a few cool projects that are the first data requesters to ever be in the Insights Network, and their PIN protocol, which is a really cool one. It's a reputation-based protocol that is an offshoot of a company called Spin, which does bike share all over the world. And they just launched like a electric scooter share, and they've already done over 1 million rides. Really cool guys. One of them was a Y Combinator alumni with myself. And then we have Signals protocol, which is a really cool automated crypto trading software. If you like to, trade tokens, it's a sort of software you can place on top of your trades so that you can pick up on trends. And then Open Garden is a really cool project that we like. They're requesting some users to participate in their exchange, data exchange. And they are trying to create a decentralized internet. And you can download their beta on Android as well. So we have a very simple demonstration of the exchange. The next steps are we're launching surveys, and when we launch surveys, that's coming alongside an iOS launch. We just got approved by Apple for the store, which is not easy to do. And so we will be debuting on iOS at the end of the month or early May, and we'll be launching the first surveys. So we have about 25 survey questions lined up already that users will be able to participate in. And that data will be sort of showcased in press about, you know, how, you know, they can get direct feedback via surveys inside the Instar wallet. The users are compensated in tokens. So it's going to be a bit of marketing. And then behind the scenes, the infrastructure is in full swing right now in terms of, you know, rapid development, so that we can start to open source our blockchain data exchange smart contract, which is nearing its final form. And the MPC protocols will be an ongoing thing. Not quite ready to open source anything there because it's really proprietary. A couple of our teammates, particularly the guys from Partesia, have spent the last 10 years developing MPC software that's ready for commercial use. And so we've been super fortunate that they're our partners in the project. And we're building on top of their libraries. So, you know, 10 years of work is now being, you know, privately looked at and then making modifications to fit our requirements. And so that, you know, basically by a year from today, we would like most of the platform to be completely decentralized and open source. In the near term, what we're going to do to get the community more involved in the actual development is we're going to be creating a community development initiative where we're going to set aside a portion of our community tokens for developer rewards who can come into the open source GitHub, you know, contribute, make commits, and be involved in the actual development of the blockchain, particularly the blockchain related things. And so we're super thrilled to get that going because we're really big on community. We have a large Telegram community. It's about 24,000 people. And so we're trying to really get these guys a bit more involved, even in hands-on, where they can, if they're developers, they can contribute. So that initiative should launch in the next month or two. And we're just super, you know, super excited to really keep pushing rapid features, because now that the app on iOS and Android is sort of in the store, now it's just about scaling features, users, participants on both sides of the marketplace.
So if we fast forward, are you looking at this application layer as being some kind of an open sourced platform? Is it like an app store? Am I getting it right? Wherein different developers or development teams can actually come on and build value-added services and products on top of this app layer, which will help me as a user find more and more interesting ways to monetize my data?
Yeah, that would be the idea, because I can give you one example. There's a sort of analytics company I'm talking to that has a, you know, sort of Fitbit style analytics watch software that I mentioned. So if the platform gets to a point where they could simply come and drop it in as an option for users, you know, and it could just appear in the app, that would be, you know, ideal and turnkey and sort of eliminate what, you know, I think the big push of dApps and, you know, decentralized technologies is if you want to apply to, you know, the iOS store, you have a lot of gatekeepers and rules and requirements. Android is a bit easier, but you know, for people to be able to just come and drop in their software as an offering, you know, that's a much more turnkey, I think, futuristic way that, you know, you're going to see technology development going, where you don't have to spend 3 months making a contract just to get, you know, something in a store. You can just go post your offering automatically through the requester dashboard, which I mentioned. We're going to be launching the requester dashboard in its simplest form, which just you can create a smart contract requesting data in exchange for tokens.
And where do I, as a user, need Instar tokens? Do I need that to participate? Do I need that to activate my app? Where do I need Instar tokens as a user?
If you want to create a smart contract as a data requester, you will need to use Instar tokens to power that smart contract for the data exchange. And the token, you know, that's what is going to sort of function, you know, with the MPC protocols. So yes, that's the reason that, you know, the token is necessary for making a request is because it's directly tied into the smart contracts that are being developed and the MPC protocols that are powering, you know, the exchange of the data. So on the requester side, that's how you can, you know, create the contract to try to request data. On the receiving side, that's just your compensation. So, yeah, you can use it to, you know, when you do receive the tokens, you can, anyone can go to the requester dashboard and make an account and make a request for data. So you can use it for that purpose if you want.
And how do I, when I get my Instar tokens, how do I use them? I got paid. Okay, do I just go to an exchange, sell them and convert them to fiat and use them? How do I use these?
Yeah, you know, with cryptocurrencies, as we see, especially with decentralized exchanges coming up, you know, it's easy, it's instant to transfer tokens to other wallets. It's near, you know, with EOS blockchain, it's going to be near zero fees. And then you mentioned revenue opportunities earlier. Something we can do for the users that we haven't even started business development on yet necessarily because it's just too early, but providing a marketplace inside the app to redeem for gift cards or special offers is definitely something that, you know, could one day appear.
Okay. So I get that. So I think I know how Instar is being used on both sides. What is the interplay between the EOS token and Instar tokens? How do they interact?
So the EOS token, as I mentioned earlier, is purely for utility purposes that guarantee bandwidth over the blockchain network. So the way that EOS blockchain works is it's open source, and you use it as your own blockchain, essentially. But then by holding EOS tokens, you get access to this awesome network of block producers who are powering the different networks so that the ledger is recording all the transactions. So think of it as the EOS token is the underlying token that powers the block producing and the ledger transactions being recorded. And there's also other benefits. There's a storage network you have access to for storing data, which I believe is partnered with IPFS. I don't know, they may be building their own as well. So you basically get rights to network usage with a guarantee that, you know, no matter what else is going on in the network, you'll always have this transaction throughput and bandwidth. So the EOS token is underlying the blockchain, and then the Instar token is what's trading amongst the users on the application level.
Oh, that is so exciting, Brian. I think I get it. I got a very clear picture. So are there other key points that you wanted to communicate to our audiences about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think that what really is going to power these community projects is the network effect of users. So what excites me most about blockchain and token projects is, you know, I was the Silicon Valley guy for the last 5 years before this, you know, founding a traditional startup, you know, private investors, you know, multiple rounds of funding. And what the difference is between a private project in regular startup land compared to crypto land, which is sort of the new model that I see startups going towards, is you have this thing called crypto tribalism that's sort of fueling your network effect. So when you look at the Telegram channel and see 24,000 people going back and forth all day, you know, throwing ideas around, wanting to be a part of the project, asking questions, it creates such a better environment for the early adopter usage and scaling in the beginning. Because, you know, I co-founded a wine marketplace, which is still around today, called undergroundseller.com. And there's a lot more paid marketing and, you know, various forms of sort of launch that you had to do that were expensive and you couldn't do unless you had money. And, you know, the great startups like Snapchat, you know, they just scale because everyone at the college university starts using it. You know, they're not paying for users. So that's, you know, that's the way, you know, that would be like your best case scenario. But with crypto, you know, usually the project doesn't really even get off the ground unless you already have a community. And so to the users, it's sort of like if you're interested in a project, you have this new opportunity where if you were interested in a wine e-commerce startup, the best you could really do is email the founder if you could find his email address and ask questions privately, you know, really try to infiltrate and get involved. But with a project in the blockchain industry, you can literally just hop in the Telegram channel and start chatting. And if you, you know, usually, you know, I'm always around, at least, you know, reading, keeping up and trying to answer questions as much as possible. You know, you can be way more involved now. So if you do find a sort of project or a vision, mission that you like, you can really get more involved than ever before. So to people who are interested in this kind of technology, I would just say, hey, if you find a project you like, absolutely join all the social channels, start chatting, ask questions, because that's what's going to make a project a success, is these communities driving growth and adoption sort of in the viral network effect rather than a, you know, big paid marketing stunt.
Well, extremely useful information to add on. So if somebody wanted to start following you, participating, where would you recommend that they go to after listening to this podcast?
Our Telegram channel is currently the most active social channel that we have. So if you just go to insights.network, our website, you'll see the Telegram button in the top right corner. You can just click it, and with another click, you can join the group. We are going to open a Discord channel probably pretty soon when we launch the developer community. And so that's going to be more focused on tech discussion. So if you are a developer and you're interested in this type of technology, keep an eye out for that. Join the Telegram in advance, because that's where all the updates, you know, go first. Anytime we have something to share, it's always right in the Telegram channel. And then, of course, we have our email list, which you can join on our website as well.
That's fantastic. Brian, thank you. That was a fabulous description. I think we got down quite a bit. And we at Kryptonites, we look forward to seeing you back over and over again as you keep releasing this. This is an exciting project for us. And I recommend all our listeners to go to the website. And can you just spell out your URL so that they can go there? And
yeah, it's insights.network. That's insights.network.
So go to insights.network and select the Telegram group and then join that and follow them.
Yeah, and, absolutely. We'll be posting this podcast to our audience for anyone who misses it. And, you know, look forward to coming back on when we have maybe a big feature update or a cool announcement to make in a couple months or so.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. And thank you, listeners. If you like this episode, rate us 5 stars on Google Play or iTunes. And we will look forward to having Brian back soon.
All right. Thank you, Doctor. 5 stars. See you, everyone. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.